Aye. United States Court of International Trade is now in session. The Honorable Jane A. Rastani presiding before court number 22-00051, AA Metals, Inc. versus the United States et al.
Will the attorneys please state their names for the record, starting with the plaintiff?
Kristen Smith, I'm here from Sandler, Travis, and Rosenberg on behalf of AA Metals.
Sari Skadis from Sandler, Travis, and Rosenberg on behalf of AA Metals.
Good afternoon. My name is Eric Lofbergen on behalf of the United States.
For Shayla Brown, U.S. Department of Commerce, for the defendant.
Peter Kinnick, Square Patent Boss, the defendant intervener,
Texas. All right. Who knows if we caught all that, but it doesn't matter because we got it. We have a sheet. You're all written down. All right. Well, if I don't get this right, it's not because I don't have any help. My entourage preceded me. All right. You're up to bat, plaintiff.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Again, I'm Kristen Smith from Sandler Travis, here today on behalf of A Metals.
Can I ask you a question? The only thing I can see that was bracketed was F. Is that actually confidential?
It was confidential because at the time that we were going through the process, we were also part of an IEPA investigation. I'm okay with disclosing that.
Okay. I think it's your stuff. So if you're okay, then this doesn't have to be a closed thing and we could post it.
Okay. But
is that all right?
That. Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. I can quit putting brackets around it. I wasn't sure. All right.
Yeah, no, we were
okay,
doing
Jeff, we have our answer?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, if Your Honor is okay, I'd like to start with your questions because I think they really go to the heart of the issues that are under consideration in the case.
Well, that's good. I guess we got the right questions then.
Yeah.
As you can see, we don't totally understand the aluminum production process. So maybe in answering these questions, we will get a better understanding.
Yeah, and I'm happy to talk to you about that and also point you to the places on the record where you can find the different information that we think is the most helpful.
Okay.
So in our briefing before the court, you know, what we discussed is that the product, so the F-Tempo product that's under consideration in Scenario 2, is not a finished CAS product, and that the Department of Commerce, when they were looking at our scope, should have looked at K-1 factors. And the K-1 factors, we feel, strongly demonstrate that Scenario 2 product falls outside the scope of the order.
Here's what gets me about this. I have a definite view of scope matters, and my view is that general scope language, because it's general, is rarely unambiguous. In fact, I can't even remember when I saw one. What is unambiguous, usually, are exclusions. But when you're talking about general scope language, I don't care how much boilerplate there is about if it's unambiguous, you can stop. Well, it's general scope language is never unambiguous as far as I can tell. And in fact, Commerce here looked at K-1 factors, didn't it?
Well, so it's interesting. In Commerce's decision, they actually say that they look at K-1 factors, but they didn't. They say that they didn't look at K-1 factors, but they did. They looked at a different scope determination in a different case. What they didn't do in this case, and what we think is really important to look at, and we think that it gives the answer to whether Scenario 2 product falls under the scope of the orders or not, is to look at the actual investigation of this order.
So, So you think they didn't look at the actual investigation, but they did go back and look at some of the ITC stuff. That's part of the investigation, right? What part of the investigation should they have looked at that they didn't look at?
Well, what they looked at was they referenced in their decision, they actually referenced a different order, not the China CAS order. In the China CAS order, there's some really important information, K-1 information, that needs to be looked at as part of a decision here. And so I'll point to where it's on the record and talk to you about why that's important. Okay. So the documents on the record, you can find them at the public record 42 and the confidential record 11.
Okay. And so okay. The original order was the common alloy aluminum sheet from China, and that was from, what, January 2019?
Approximately, yes.
Yeah. Okay. And what about that order, that investigation, and the order from that investigation, did they not consider?
So there's a number of different things. So the first thing is the supplemental questionnaire that we put on the record at Attachment Exhibit 6. That's the International Trade Commission's, that's their final determination. And so in the ITC final decision, what they explain is that the subject merchandise is a thin wrought aluminum product that's produced via a rolling process. And that information can be found on page I-12
of that decision. What do you think that they didn't consider the ITC final decision?
I don't know, because under the regulations, it's important to look at these K1 factors. And they did not look at that.
I mean, I got the idea that they did look at the ITC investigation.
Respectfully, I disagree, because in the ITC decision, they specifically say that subject merchandise is thin-wrought aluminum product that's produced via a rolling process. Now, had they looked at that language, and then there's additional information that I'll go through from the original China investigation, they would have confirmed that this cast product falls outside the scope of the orders.
Okay, I think the question is not, I think they did look at the ITC investigation. Okay. I think you think they drew some incorrect conclusions. And I think that you might help me out there by telling me, what is it about your product that doesn't match the scope? As I understand it from looking at, I don't know, a picture of the casting process, the last step is a rolling,
mm-hmm.
right? There is a rolling process at the end of the casting. So what makes your product not the product at issue?
Well, there's two different answers that I have with respect to that. So if you look at the ITC staff report, and this is in the final decision, it starts on page I-14, and it really provides a really good overview of how CAS product is manufactured. And what it explains is that there's three different steps. So the first step is the melting and refining. The next step is the casting aluminum into semi-finished forms, such as sheet ingot. So this is the phase we're talking about under scenario two. And the next is rolling semi-finished form into flat roll products. So what the commission explains when they're talking about this is, following the production of molten aluminum with the desired properties, the molten aluminum is cast into a semi-finished form that can enter into a rolling process. So the product that we're talking about and that you're looking at, this is an intermediate product.
Well, is it rolled? Is it in a roll or a coil?
It is in coil form. I wouldn't call it not a rolled product. It hasn't gone through the cold rolling process. And why that's important,
so it went through a hot rolling process?
I don't think I would necessarily call it a cold or hot rolling process. It went through the process where the molten aluminum goes through the system. I can point you to it. It's on page I-15. They describe it as the molten aluminum is transferred to a holding purse where it's stored at the correct level of purity and temperature until it's ready to be fastened to a casting unit. As the molten aluminum is fed in the casting unit, it flows between water-cooled rollers and emerges as continuous strip of aluminum. The strip of aluminum is fed into a combination stand where it's cut into designated lengths by shears before it's wound into coil. And the strips produced during this process can be between 3 and 20 millimeters in thickness. So what's important here is It's not yet.
I'm looking at this chart, and the end of the continuing casting process says rewind and coil car.
So I don't have that specific chart in front of me. I can tell you the one that I'm looking at right now is on page I-16, and it talks about going through the molten process.
We're looking at the same chart.
You are. Okay.
But I'm looking at aluminum sheet, continuous casting process.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing is the rewind and coil car. Are you saying that somehow your stuff got out at the combination stand and never made it to rewind and coiling?
No, this stuff, though, is still part of the continuous cast product.
I see.
And so it has not yet become a final product. It's an intermediary product. And what makes it a finished cast product is the actual cold rolling.
Okay. Where in the scope does it say it has to be finished? It says a flat-rolled aluminum product having a thickness of 6.3 millimeters or less, but greater than 0.2 millimeters, which I guess is aluminum foil. So huge range.
Mm-hmm.
Not very thin. It's a flat-rolled aluminum product. So are you saying your stuff is not a flat-rolled aluminum product?
That's correct. What I'm saying is that...
So it's not rolled to be... It's not rolled
out
flat.
I'm not saying it's not, you know, at the cast stage. When it comes out of the cast stage, it is not a CAS product yet. What makes it a CAS product is when you look at the rolling phase. And why that's important is that's where the mechanical properties of the product are set. So when it goes through the cold rolling process, and so that's what occurred in this case in Turkey, that's what made it into common alloy aluminum sheet. Before that, this product was just an intermediary product, so it was not yet.
I don't think you're going to win on intermediate or not intermediate. You're going to win on, if you win, mm-hmm. on mechanical properties, not some label that it's intermediate or not intermediate. So what mechanical properties make it different from the scope of the that's covered?
So what's important when you're looking at the scope language is it's set by the Aluminum Association. For Aluminum Association, the finished common CAS product, and this is talked about in the... You can see the reflection of the importance of this mechanical properties when you look at what was actually considered in the underlying investigation. And I'll show you several examples so you can see the importance of that. So one of them to look at is during the International Trade Commission, when they were looking at the product, the ITC, as part of their decision, they look at pricing categories. And the pricing categories that were considered by the ITC were solely for finished products. So they looked at tempers O and H. The underlying injury decision at no point looked at or contemplated any intermediate products. It was solely focused on the finished product. Also, this is also something that happens at the Department of Commerce, and that's also important to take in mind. So at the Department of Commerce, what Commerce looked at, again, was they incorporated O and H temper and took that into account in their analysis. And this was based on input from the domestic industry. And I point you for this, if you look at, again, our supplemental questionnaire at page 8 and also exhibit 5, that's where the domestic industry in this case addressed the model match comments. And that's really important because that nowhere in the comments did the domestic industry look at any intermediate products or request that they be put within the scope. The discussion here was limited to temper regarding O and H. And that's important.
I thought in the original investigation at that time, F temper wasn't coming into the United States. And it was only in the later investigations that covered a multitude of countries that F temper became an issue because it was coming in from those countries. By the time of the investigation in this case, F temper wasn't coming in from China. I thought that was the...
So based on the record evidence, no, and I can tell you from working with clients, F temper has been, and it continues to be, imported from the domestic industry to use in their, actually even by the domestic industry, to use in their production process.
Well, I guess you're saying, my question is more specific.
Uh-huh.
At the time of the investigation that you're concerned with, was F-Temper coming into the country from China?
Yes, that's my understanding.
Okay, and where do you get that from?
I don't have a specific site for that.
Okay. In large quantities, or are you thinking some small amount that wouldn't have triggered anything?
So I think F-Temper always has come in to the United States.
All right. All right. Let me ask you this. What do you mean by wrought and unwrought? And do you think your product is unwrought?
So what we mean by unwrought here is the unfinished product. It's the cast product. So it's a product that has not gone through the rolling process. And that rolling process is really what's important to establish the mechanical properties of the product. And so that imparts a lot of important things, like the strength of the product, which, and that, in fact, impacts how it's used. And so that's a really fundamental part of the manufacturing process of CAS. So the
Okay. Let me then ask you about re-rolled.
Mm-hmm.
What is re-rolled?
So re-roll product, and we refer to that also in our case brief, and we use that interchangeably as F-Temper product. So the intermediary product, so it's the product that is not yet a product that...
re-roll sounds to me like it's been rolled twice, but you're saying F isn't rolled at all.
It's not cold rolled, so it's not a process. So if I imported
it's
a product...
It's only rolled out of through the casting process.
Right.
But why would you call that re-rolled? That'd be, at most, re-rolled once as it comes out of the casting process.
So
what's re-roll?
So re-rolled is the intermediate cast product, and that's what we refer to as re-rolled.
Really? Is that the... Everybody understands re-roll means not rolled twice, re-rolled once out of the casting process.
The product here, yes, it's called re-rolled under consideration in Scenario 2. And the products that
we're... I find that very confusing. I mean, when you think about the term re-rolled, don't
right.
you think rolled again? Isn't that what re means?
No, I agree that the terminology that's used is, I mean, it's a common way to refer to this product, but the product is a cast product. So it's not yet a product that has undergone the cold roll processing.
Okay. Why don't we... go through the questions that you think you haven't covered yet.
Okay.
I think you've covered what you think is the K1 factor that's missing. You think a better contemplation of the original investigation.
Yeah, we think that it's really important to look at that original investigation because what that tells you looking at this information is what was considered, what was looked at by the ITC in their injury determination, and also what was looked at by Commerce in their model matching was that's how they conduct anti-dumping.
Okay, well, go to question two. What's the answer to that?
So in question two, you ask us regarding the following language. It says that subject merchandise includes common alloy sheet that's been further processed in a third country, including but not limited to annealing, tempering, painting, varnishing, trimming, cutting, punching, and or sitting, or any other processing that would not have otherwise would remove the merchandise from the scope of the order if performed in the country of manufacturing. So in looking at this language, my answer to you would be that this language is not applicable to the product that's imported under Scenario 2. And
the answer to how it should be interpreted in relation to F-Temper products is it doesn't cover it because...
And that's because, actually, I think that the same analysis that was used for Scenario 1 should be used here. So specifically, if you look at Commerce's scope determination for Scenario 1, that's at page 7 of their final scope decision, Commerce properly reconsidered whether the non-subject merchandise that underwent further processing of the subject. Here, they found that because the product that was imported, this is the Sanira 1, fell outside the scope of the order, it didn't matter regarding the processing.
Well, it was big, right? It was more than 6.3.
Correct. And but the same analysis applies here. The product, as it comes into the United States, into Turkey, the product is non-subject merchandise. So the same analysis
applies. Okay. Means you have, you're answering this question by your primary argument. Okay.
But even arguing, you know, differently, that the merchandise was China originating at the time that it went into Turkey, I think the answer is the same. So if you look at the language, it says that would not otherwise remove the merchandise from the scope of the order if performed. Now, as we did argue in our case brief, we think that substantial transformation needs to be looked at in this case. And that shows that there was substantial transformation that was going on in Turkey.
The whole purpose of this kind of language is to avoid a substantial transformation analysis. So what they do is they say, here, if it's in scope when it leaves China and this stuff happens to it, it's not substantially transformed. The way you win is by saying it's not in scope when it left China and went into Turkey.
Well, so I think there's two things. We do argue that it's out of scope because it was non-subject merchandise when it went into Turkey.
Okay.
But even if you were to disagree with that, the answer is the same. Because if you look at the different types of processing, these are minor processing, and it says that would not otherwise remove the merchandise from the scope of the order if performed in the country of manufacture. Here, you know, we submit that it does, that the processing, the rolling processing that occurs in Turkey takes it outside the scope of the order. And this is important because...
Wait. Okay. If anything, according to your first argument, rolling in Turkey would put it in the scope of the order.
Yes.
You're claiming that what happens in Turkey makes the kind of common alloy aluminum sheet that was intended to be in the order. And so what happened is it became... It wasn't in the order. Now it's only in the order because it's in Turkey. Because it's not in the order because now it's a Turkish product.
Right. So
it changed from an out of order Chinese product to an in order Turkish product, but the order doesn't cover Turkey.
That's correct.
It's not one of the countries that's covered.
This order only covers China. So,
that's that other case that covered many countries.
Yes.
Okay. So it became an in-scope product in Turkey substantially. It seems to me it still all relies on it being out of the order in China when it came from China.
For the type of processing, because in commerce precedent, if you look at that, rolling, so cold rolling, it substantially transformed the product. So.
Commerce doesn't adhere to the customs view of substantial transformation. And I think what they try to do in their orders is write substantial transformation out, is basically what they're doing. And I'm not sure they can't do that. They're not customs.
Well, so I agree with you that there's been many cases that we've seen that customs and commerce substantial transformation decisions sometimes differ. And I don't disagree with that. But in this case, I think that there's some important things to look at. First of all, I don't think that the language that's provided in the scope necessarily overrides substantial transformation, and there's a specific reason for that. This is all minor transferring. So it's things like painting, varnishing, trimming, cutting. So it's things that don't change the mechanical properties. And that's, I think, that this decision, one of the biggest issues to look at is have the mechanical properties been changed.
Okay, so what you're saying that even if they could avoid the normal substantial transformation test by listing a bunch of things, if you look at all these things together, they're minor and probably are not substantial transformations or anywhere close to it, and therefore we should not read other processing broadly.
Right, because if you look at the, after they describe the processing, it says, or any other processing that would not otherwise remove the merchandise from the scope of the order. So by putting that limiting language in, Commerce recognizes that they can't pull, they can't, you know, a complete different product from a different country, which is what we have now, pull it under the scope of the order. And that's important. They did not put rolling here. They could have put rolling. They didn't put rolling. Okay. And the reason why is consistent with Commerce's other decisions. So we, in our briefing, we put both customs rulings and Commerce precedent showing that, that the rolling transforms the product into a new and different product.
Okay, let's go to the next one. This is language from your brief, which I couldn't quite understand.
Okay. So here, in our case brief, we talk about the commission also differentiates between re-roll and subject merchandise during its injury determination. And the commission's description of the manufacturing process of subject merchandise, re-rolled stock, i.e. F-temper, is the coil aluminum sheet resulting from the melting, refining, and casting processes before the sheet is further manufactured into CAS products through the manufacturing. So that's what we were referring to here is from our, the site for this is from our supplemental questionnaire. And so it's supplemental questionnaire at Exhibit 6. So this is the ITC decision. And again, as we, you know, explain in our case brief, and if you look at the actual language in the ITC decision, it splits out the processing into three different parts. So the melting of the aluminum, the casting of the aluminum, and the processing of the aluminum. And again, we think this is really important. In fact, if you look at the ITC decision, it says, following the production of molten aluminum with the desired properties, the molten aluminum is cast into semi-finished form that can enter a rolling process. So and that's at page I-15. It's the first sentence of the section for casting. And so that's important because what that shows, it shows that the ITC views cast product as a separate product, and that's what we were discussing in our case brief.
Okay, I think we've covered all the questions. What else do you want to tell me?
So we've talked about a lot of the issues that, that we think are important to the case going through your questions, but I think that there's a few small points that I'd like to highlight to the court. The first is that the facts, and we think that the facts in this case are simple. The China CAS order covers aluminum common alloy sheet, which is a flat rolled aluminum product having a thickness of 6.3 milligrams or less, but greater than 0.2 millimeters, and coils cut to length regardless of this. And this is from the first sentence of the order. The product that we've been talking about today, when it's imported into Turkey, it's continuous cast coil, and so it's not a flat rolled product. And so this is an intermediary product at the time of import. And so as we've already discussed, the record shows that it's at the time of entry, not a product, not subject merchandise.
So I take it this coil business, either it could be a bunch of sheets stacked up or it could be a roll. And you say it's cast, but it's in a roll.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's what a coil is.
That's correct.
Okay.
So we've discussed the Kaivan factors. You know, one thing that I'd like to point out, and we did touch on this, I'm not going to go into detail. You know, Commerce looked at the Kaivan factors with respect to looking at a different order. This particular case was brought by the Department of Commerce. The Department of Commerce set the scope in this case, and we think it's really important to look at the underlying investigation. You know, the Department of Commerce has a duty to
set... Okay, let's not be repetitious.
Okay, so... And then the last thing that, that I'd like to touch on is Department of Commerce, the decisions before the Department of Commerce, they're really not a game of gotcha. And what that means is that interested parties need to have an opportunity.
Yeah, well, I read what they asked you. This is a loser argument. You can't say that they weren't because they adopted your language that they were agreeing. They made it very clear they wanted a good explanation of what was happening. That is really a loser argument as far as I'm concerned. But I've heard it.
Okay.
I've read it.
Okay.
I've considered it. Anything else? Because you get to come back.
That's all. So thank you very much. And
okay.
If you have questions,
you'll be back.
To answer them. Okay.
All right. You're going to stand up here and tell me it's unambiguous?
The language at issue in terms of what's covered by the scope is unambiguous.
Then why did you look at K1 factors?
Well, they looked at K1 factors because the plaintiff put them on the record and Commerce considered their arguments.
Let me tell you, it's not unambiguous. You have to look at K1 factors. This is general language. It uses terms like common aluminum alloy sheet. General terms. It doesn't tell you anything.
Your Honor.
Which is why you looked at K1 factors. So now answer the question. Is this thing in or out and why?
Okay. If I may, Your Honor, it's in scope. Okay. Commerce did look at K1 factors. They looked at the term common alloy aluminum sheet, and they said it's not defined. So then it went to the...
It's not defined. It's ambiguous. It's not defined.
Well, that's fine.
So I'm tired of reading decisions that are internally inconsistent. They say it's unambiguous. We don't have to look at anything. And then they go look at something because guess what? It's ambiguous. I'm also tired of reading briefs from the government that don't meet plaintiff's briefs. They never said anything about K2. They don't care about K2. They're talking about K1. You should have never filed a brief with me that mentioned K2. You know, so like, let's be consistent here. You know, if you win this case, it's not going to be because Commerce wrote a sensible determination or the Justice Department wrote a sensible brief because both were lacking. But you still may win because you may be right. So let's look at what's in and what's out.
Okay, well, first of all, they did argue that K2 factors are relevant, and so we did respond to that argument. But in terms of what's in and what's out, there's a distinction that Commerce relied on between wrought and unwrought products. This is a distinction that plaintiffs drew as well. So what Commerce did was it looked at the Aluminum Association standards, which Commerce allegedly ignored, but it didn't ignore. It looked at those standards, and it said that and it looked at the information provided by the plaintiff as to the type of alloy, the 3003 code. So we know very little about the product other than what plaintiff tells us, of course. The Aluminum Association standards make a hard distinction between a four-number alloy designation without a decimal point and a three-number designation with a decimal and a number following the decimal point. If it's a wrought product, it has a four-number code. If it's an unwrought product, if it's a cast product, it has a three-digit code followed by a decimal point. So what Commerce did, it said, okay, it's possible, hypothetically, that it could go either way here. But we're going to look at the actual description provided by the plaintiff, which shows this four-digit code. And they said, well, okay, that's a four-digit code. So we see what the Aluminum Association says. That says it's a wrought product. So that means it's a rolled product. It's not these dimensions from a casting process. There was a rolling process following that. And the plaintiff does not say anything about those numerical distinctions with the decimal point or without the decimal point. There's nothing about them. There's no response.
Okay. What they're saying, you know this sheet, right, the one we're all looking at. She's saying that at the end of this product, you have continuous casting, that you have just a rolled-up, unwrought product, and it's not really rolled. Anyway, that's what she's saying, that rolling is a separate process.
Rolling is separate from casting.
So are you saying that their product
I can't is, see that far.
Their product is not this product?
Sorry, what page are you referring to?
Okay, this is page 209 and 473.
Okay, yes.
It's the form 1-16. It's got a picture of continuous casting.
I see.
And at the end, you come out with something that's coiled because it's in the rewind and coil car.
Yes.
So according to plaintiff, that's the end of the casting process, and that's what we have here. And there's no real rolling.
That's,
so I guess the answer is this what we have here?
No.
Or, okay, thank you.
No,
what do we have here?
This is the page that you're referring to, I-16, that shows the casting process. And the casting process can produce, you know, there's roll casting is the method. And I think this is really going to your question one. So there's a method called roll casting where it's extruded, the molten aluminum is extruded into a casting device. I'm not exactly sure the right terminology, but it has rollers. It's not a flat rolling process. So that's the distinction. So after it's cast into a thin sheet, then that cast aluminum can be rolled by a flat rolling process, which would produce a wrought aluminum product, which is what Commerce found that plaintiff's product was here. So that's the distinction, Your Honor.
So what you're saying, the Commerce made a factual determination that this was a wrought product, which had some treatment beyond this scheme that we're looking at I-16.
That's correct.
Okay. So, all right. Can you point to me where the factual determination is in the final scope determination?
Yes. Well, in scenario one, it describes the scenario two on page 8 and 9 of the orders. It says under scenario two, the second paragraph, it says information provided by AM Metals in the initial and supplemental responses indicates that the aluminum coil exported from China to Turkey is a flat rolled aluminum sheet having a thickness of 6.3 millimeters or less, but greater than 0.2 millimeters. Not cast, continuous cast coil and unwrought aluminum manufactured by casting. And then it provides the evidence on which it relied.
Okay, so this is you say their information shows that it is not continuous cast coil and unwrought, which would be what happens at the end of figure 1I-2, but is in fact a rolled product. And the site for that is, note 47, aluminum, I don't know what that is.
That's exhibit.
That's the aluminum association description?
Yes.
Okay. Whereas wrought aluminum are designated with 4 digits. So it's all based on this digit business.
Well, that's the distinction where if it's unclear, you know, it could go either way hypothetically. Like, well, here's what those numbers mean. They have a specific meaning. There's a reason why there's a decimal point and there's not a decimal
point. So if it's a factual determination, then the substantial evidence that you're citing is the 4 digits.
There are other evidence that supports, you know, there's the physical characteristics. But, yes, that is evidence on the record that demonstrates Commerce's finding is supported by substantial evidence.
Okay. Well, since we're doing it this little dance, I just want to write down all the substantial evidence.
Okay.
4 digits?
The 4 digits, yes. The physical characteristics.
Maybe we should make sure we're on the same page. If it's 6.3 or thereabouts, but unwrought, you think it's outside the scope of the order?
I understand that to be the case, yes.
Okay. So let's not talk about 6.3 or 0.2. We know it's within that So let's talk about the things that make it in or out. And four digits, because that generally indicates rot.
Yes.
What else?
I mean, that's the main one. I mean, that's the one that really determines whether or not it's a rot product or an unrot product. There's lots of descriptions. There's, you know, it's made from a rolling process. But assuming that we accept that a rot product with these types of specifications is the product of a rolling process, then we have, you know, two potential scenarios where either this product that's consistent with these dimensions is from a casting process, or a product consistent with these dimensions is from a rolling process. So, you know, how do you decide?
Okay.
Then
so
you go to the Aluminum Association.
That there has to be a cold rolling process, that Commerce has to be finding that there was a cold rolling process.
No, I don't believe that to be the case.
Well, then what does Commerce have to be finding?
It has to be finding that there's a flat rolling process, not necessarily hot rolling or cold rolling.
Okay. A flat rolling process.
And to that end, there's the information submitted by the plaintiff with the diagram. It's footnote 50, where it says AA Metals supplemental response indicates that a thin wrought aluminum sheet is produced by a rolling process. So
only through a rolling process.
It just says produced via a rolling process.
I'm reading footnote 50 of the determination. There's, where the diagram explains that unwrought aluminum castings become wrought aluminum plates, sheet, strip, and foil only through the rolling process.
Yes, to get a product at this dimension as a wrought product from a aluminum casting, it would go through a rolling process. That's how you get below, you know, 6.3 millimeters and less.
Okay, I see your answer here. Okay, what else do you want to say?
Just respond to a couple points. There's the plaintiff has discussed why continuous cast coil is outside the scope, but the problem here is, as we discussed before, is there's no specific evidence that this is in fact continuous cast coil, you know, such that Commerce's determination that it was a wrought aluminum product and produced by a flat rolling process is unsupported by substantial evidence.
What mechanically happens to something if it's wrought or unwrought? Is there some molecular something or other that goes on?
I can't speak to that. I don't have the technical expertise, and it's a good question, though. But it's wrought, as I understand, means it's a, you know, it's worked in some capacity, and that's what the word wrought means. But in terms of the actual molecular change, you know, I really don't have that technical expertise.
I got another question for you. As I understand it, their big complaint at this point is that the original investigation, in this case, in the China CAAS case, was not considered by Commerce.
I am thrilled that you brought that up, because that's a big argument that they're making. Well, it didn't consider this, the pricing analysis, but if you look at its Exhibit 6 of Tab 8, and if you turn to page 24, footnote 144 responds to a comment that, you know, respondents, you know, the Chinese industry, you know, they argued that, you know, the underselling pricing analysis can't be found to be significant because the pricing product coverage is too low. They picked 8 specific, you know, sample configurations. And Commerce said, the Commission said, we do not agree. We would expect there to be constraints on the pricing product coverage in light of the broad product range for casts with substantial variations in alloy series, gauges, and widths. Indeed, pricing product coverage in this range is not uncommon in Commission investigations concerning highly varied products. So all these distinctions, you know, re-roll and tempers and finish versus intermediate and upstream versus downstream, those don't appear anywhere in the language of the orders. And what the language of the orders makes, I mean, this part's really not ambiguous, anything that meets the physical scope distinct definitions is considered to be, is treated as in-scope merchandise. So the fact that there are, you know, they didn't pick one product or another product, you know, the court shouldn't make much of that or take much out of that as that
well,
evidence.
Do you think the ITC covered plain casting material, stuff that came out at the end of the casting process before a rolling process?
No. We have not taken that position.
Okay. You just don't think this product is that.
Right.
Okay.
That's 100% right.
I see where you're going with this. All right. Anything else?
If I just have, may have a moment.
You may.
We have no further comments. Thank you.
All right. Okay.
Peter Koenig, Squire Patton Boggs for defendant intervener. I've just been listening, and so I'm not going to repeat things, but I just had some reactions to what I heard. And as far as the K-1 factors, and if one goes to the ITC report and the original China investigation, and at page I-17, it says the purpose of rolling is to reduce thickness. And I think that's an important statement. And then you combine that with page I-12 of the ITC, same ITC report, and it said Roth aluminum is produced via a rolling process. So it's just rolling, and it doesn't, nowhere does it say it has to be when the rolling occurs or whether it's hot or cold, it's just rolling. So when the, to my knowledge, and from the ITC report, when the product comes out of the continuous cast, and it comes out at like 3 millimeters thickness, you could also produce the same product by, if it came out 6 meters thickness, and then you rolled it down to 3. It's the same product, and that's why it's irrelevant from my reading of the
ITC. I understand the government is not taking the position that material that comes out of the continuous casting process only, they're not taking the position that that's in-scope merchandise. They're taking the position that this is actually rolled product.
Right.
And they're taking that position based on the basically the digit indications. So you want to argue something beyond what the government is arguing.
Yeah, I wasn't talking about the digits. I was talking about the
you think that stuff that comes out of the continuous casting process, if it's within the same measurements, is in the scope.
Yeah, because there's a rolling process involved, and it comes out flat rolled. The way there's two ways that you can get to the ITC draws a distinction between continuous cast and direct chill. Now, direct chill, they actually pour the aluminum into a mold, and that's all. And so there's no rolling on direct chill. Continuous casting, there is rolling. So if it was produced by direct chill, just putting it in a mold, which is not the case here, then you would have to be looking for some other type of rolling. And that's why the rolling can become...
So you're counting the rolling up into a coil at the end of the continuous cast process is making this within the scope.
Right, because it's rolled.
All right, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. And then another reaction I had, it was talked about how Department of Commerce defined condoms and that there's nothing for temper, F-temper. But they don't discuss how condoms are created. The way condoms are created, and in any cite to the condom discussion by Commerce will say, Commerce is looking for significant distinctions that affect price and cost. So the condoms do not reflect all product characteristics. They will reflect, like, thickness. But thickness can be achieved either through the continuous cast out to 3 millimeters thickness or by continuous cast to 6 millimeters reduced to 3. But either way, it's going to have the same conum. So I'm not aware of conums being really a discussion point in any precedent as far as what's in scope or what's out of scope. And by the same principle, the ITC pricing products, what the ITC does there is it takes what it considers to be the major products representative of the market for determining if there's underselling. So again, the ITC products are not going to be all inclusive, and they're not intended to be.
Okay. Yes, well, I'm usually concerned about ITC decisions that exclude something. What you're saying is they just didn't get to this. They
right.
didn't have a reason to get to this.
All right. And I guess the final point, if you look at the ITC report at page 11 and 12, it talks of aluminum sheet is a flat rolled product, not within the thickness range. And then it goes to list the exceptions, and the only exceptions they list are products outside of the thickness range. So I think that's important, too. They don't go on to list other exceptions.
Okay.
So that was it.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. I'm claiming it's going to be last, so I want the government to come back. Do you want to make any comments on his comments?
Just a point that there's a dispute about what this is. You know, there's all this just whether it's, you know, whether this hypothetical, you know, this grand categories, but the issue is whether or not the product that was imported from into Turkey from China is in-scope product. And we have explained, you know, certainly
what
shown substantial evidence that it is.
For that is.
What?
Let me ask you something about the argument the plaintiff made that there has to be a substantial transformation analysis, even if this product was, I guess, out of scope. Even if it was out of scope, it now becomes a new product in Turkey, and that what happens to it is rolling. And that is something different from annealing, tempering, et cetera. You get the argument?
Yeah. Well, there are kind of two arguments there. One is, you know, whether or not rolling is enough, you know, whether or not, you know, this applies to products that were, you know, to the extent that they were rolled in Turkey, if that were, if those products were rolled in China, would they still be in scope? And yes, a flat roll product that's flat rolled is in scope. And so the substantial transformation, you know, argument relies on the premise, on the assumption or the misimpression that the product that was imported into Turkey from China is out of scope continuous cast coil, such that, so if it's out of scope continuous cast coil, when it leaves China and then it gets to Turkey and then they flat roll it and becomes in scope, you know, that was some sort of substantial transformation. But you know, the, Your Honor doesn't have to reach that because if it's out of scope when it leaves China, we acknowledge that, it's, that the orders don't apply. The issue is whether or not it was in scope when it left China. And so if it goes from in scope to in scope, then there's no need to conduct some sort of substantial transformation test because you have two in scope products. So the also just the point about substantial transformation test, it's a gap filling you know, mechanism when you don't necessarily have a rule or where you need a rule. But here you have an in-scope product leaving China and an in-scope product leaving Turkey. So there's no need to consider whether or not or whether to apply a substantial transformation test.
So, okay. I'm just trying to figure out the substantial. I see what you're saying. You're saying, well, if it's out of scope, out of China, it's out of scope, and that would be like scenario one,
right.
out of scope. Okay.
Yep.
I think they may be saying it's going through a different kind of rolling process in Turkey beyond, and therefore it's a totally new product out of Turkey and unrelated.
Right. The cases that they're citing were products that weren't first rolled. So it's not rolled and then rolled again. They were rolled for the first time, essentially, in the third country.
Okay.
And with respect to that, rolling isn't the same as, you know, annealing or these other types of practices. I mean, the term other processes is broad, and it certainly can cover rolling.
Okay. Thank you. I think I will let plaintiff come back. I must say, Mr. Koenig's brief was more to the point and more understandable than the government's. I really expect better from the government. Okay.
So I have a few things that I wanted to bring up. One with respect to flat rolling. It sounds like the government agrees with us that if the flat rolling occurs in Turkey, then it falls outside the scope of the order. I know that you were having some back and forth with Mr. Koenig, and he was suggesting that rolling isn't enough with the flat rolling to take it outside the scope of the order. And you're asking questions about the changes that occur because of that.
I think we have two different views. Mr. Koenig's view is thickness is all, and it doesn't matter whether it's rolled or not, it's in the scope. The government, and I got to go with the government here, it's their order. The government is taking the position that some kind of rolling had to happen, and that makes it rot, and that's why it has four digits. And he doesn't really know what happened to it. It's a black box, but the evidence is that it's rolled and wrought in some way.
And that's
what makes it in the scope. That's, as I understand it, the government's position. If I don't understand the government's position, shake your head no. Okay, he does I do understand the government's position.
Okay.
So I'm going with that. I'm not going all the way to Mr. Koenig's point because I don't think I should, because I'm going with the government's view of what their view is.
So based on the government's view, you know, we disagree with that. They based their decision on the four digits, so that they're basing it on the numbers from the TL sheet, so the 3XXX numbers. What that number is that tells you what the chemical alloys are within the product. So if you look at the product sheet for series 3000, it lists the series. Now, the product coming out of China is a cast product, and I know the government says that it should be and I apologize if I say it wrong, but a three-digit number, not the four-digit number. What's important to understand here is this is an intermediary product. So it's not a product that's being sold as a final cast product. For example, a dye, if that was being sold, would have the three-digit number telling the technical characteristics, but that's not the case here.
What are you telling me about the four-digit number? What do you think this four-digit number that was put on this product means?
The chemical alloys. And we're not arguing that. In fact, if you look at
Alloys,
A-L-L-O-Y-S.
Well, an alloy is a combination of elements. So
how the numbers work with the association, it's one through, I think there's six, there may be more. Each of the first numbers, so what number three tells you is what the alloying element is. So it could be silicon, it could be something else. The others tell you if you look at that up on the tool sheets, which we provide, I believe, in our initial submission with the government. In the teal sheets, it'll say the chemical specifications to be a specific type of product. So 3000-0021, for example, you can see what it is. What we're talking about is the tempering, and that's different.
So your argument here is that the four-digit number does not relate to rolling or not rolling.
Correct. It relates to the chemical alloys. Now, the three digits, and when we're talking about the specific characteristics of the product, and that's what's important for the rolling process. So what occurs, the rolling process in Turkey, that gives it the mechanical characteristics. And so if you look at our filing, we provide on page 14, of our supplemental, the narrative, we discussed the changes of brittle microstructure, strengthening that happens in turkey by the significant reduction. Now, the product that we're looking at today, and I can't say the number, it's confidential, but it's a dramatic reduction. And that's important because that's the mechanical difference in the product. And so,
well, you know, I know what number you're talking about.
Yeah.
And considering that the range that's covered by this order is 6.3 to 0.2, that change doesn't mean a whole lot to me.
It should, because it's what we're talking about is the changes in the microstructure, so what you can use the final product for. And so that's very important. So if you look at the four-digit number, that doesn't change. So making aluminum, it's similar to when you make a cake, you put all the ingredients in. The ingredients of the product that was made, this isn't a clad product, so the ingredients that went into making this piece of metal started at that melting phase. So you mixed a little bit of this element, a little bit of this melt element. If you test it at the end, it doesn't change. What changes, and this is why the final flat rolling process is important, the mechanical characteristics of the product change. And so that's...
I just want to read you this, and you're telling me this is absolutely incorrect. Aluminum alloy castings are designated with three digits and a decimal digit zero, whereas wrought aluminum alloy products are designated with four digits with no decimal digit. So they're saying these digits are what indicates it, and you say it doesn't. All those numbers mean our chemical composition.
So there's two different numbers. The 3,000 number, that tells you what the chemical composition are. The cast numbers, that's what it's important if you're selling it as a final cast product. So like, for example, a dye. This wasn't what was happening here. This product is an intermediate product that was then being sold to Turkey or manufactured into the subject merchandise for
okay.
a flat rolled common alloy sheet.
So anyway, what the government decision cites for depending upon this is this Aluminum Association Exhibit 19. Do we have that, Amy? Can you get me that? Find it on my computer, find it on your computer. Okay. A Metals relies on Exhibit 21 to argue that both unwrought and wrought aluminums are identified by a four-digit designation system, but Exhibit 21 covers only wrought aluminum, not unwrought aluminum.
And I don't have that before me, but we're looking for
it. I'm going to find it. Thank you. All right, what am I looking at here? Okay, Exhibit 19, government, 28, Appendix A. Amy, can you help me find this appendix?
Aluminum Association went from the mine to the mill appendix. The government is citing appendix A10A. You also can get it for tables one.
What does the government want me to look at here in their footnotes? Appendix 10, okay. Appendix A10A-3. Appendix D and Appendix A. Okay, here's Appendix A. A3. Okay, here.
Yes.
Yeah. So those are the casting? I don't know. What is used to identify aluminum in the form of castings and so those all have dots?
Yeah.
All right. What's it tell us what the four ones are? Mm-hmm. I don't want to mess you up. Aluminum alloys and the alloy group, but this doesn't tell us what the four are. Okay. Well, that document doesn't help you. It helps the government says, the one they cited to says, a system of four-digit numerical designations used to identify wrought aluminum and wrought aluminum alloys. For the unwrought, they use three plus and then a decimal point.
And so my answer remains the same. I don't disagree that this is the system for cast products. Our product wasn't a finished cast product that was being sold, like a dye or something like that. The product was being sold as an intermediary product for CAS products.
And so, I understand your argument, but I don't know that it kills his argument that substantial evidence is found in this digital system. I don't see that. And if you want to say anything else, fine. Otherwise...
Yeah, there was one document that we were looking for, but I'm not able to find it. So let me just go on quickly and just address one other thing that I wanted to bring up. With respect to the ITC determination and also the model matching, talking about why intermediary products weren't addressed, and it's not that they weren't considered because the pricing was different or not. In the International Trade Commission, what they considered was a flat-rolled CAS product. The reason why the product under Scenario 2 wasn't considered, it's an intermediary product. And that's the same with the materials looked at for the model match. You know, they were looking at final physical products, finished rolled products.
I don't want to lose your argument. What can you tell me specifically in the ITC investigation what you're referring to by page number?
Sure. If you just give me 1 minute. So one of the things that we were looking at, it would start with at page I-15. This is of Exhibit 6 of our submission, our supplemental response.
Okay.
But also the ITC, their definition of the product, so this is also the ITC final determination at I-12, when they defined the subject merchandise as a rolled, wrought aluminum product. And so they weren't defining it as an intermarry product.
Okay, I understand your argument.
So.
All right, thank you. Before everybody goes away, Amy. I have gotten permission to end this argument. Thank you very much. I know a lot more than I did when I started this argument. I'll tell you that. So, okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Court stands adjourned.